So let's bring in our super friend of the show on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is Brian Anderson. Hello, BA. How are you?
What's up, buddy?
I'm good, fellas. How are you?
I'm good. So were you happy the Dodgers won, or were you rooting for the Yankees? Were you rooting for more games? What are you thinking?
Well, I'll tell you what. When it got down for the Dodgers to have the opportunity to sweep them, I was like, you know what? Sweep them. You know, being in the same division as the Yankees and, you know, growing up in Northeast Ohio, a Cleveland Indian fan, and I can remember my dad at a very young age showing me his I hate the Yankee hanky, all of that. You just learn to not like the Yankees. And so being in the same division with them, it got to that point, and I'm like, you know what, sweep them. Just be done with it. I always root for more baseball, but I wanted them to be swept. Once they weren't, then I'm like, I can take more baseball. And so that's why the other night, watching game five, I was kind of hoping that they would get it back to L.A. for a game six, hoping, obviously, not that I'm any big fan of the team, hoping that the Dodgers would ultimately prevail. But at that point, wanted to see a little bit more baseball. But I'll tell you what, what I saw in game five, I'll tell you, I think last season was my 32nd season in Major League Baseball in some capacity. You know, player, you know, did the coaching thing for a couple of years, and then obviously I'm in the broadcast booth now. And I'm going to tell you what, I have never seen a bigger meltdown in a bigger spot than I saw the other night. I could not believe what I was watching. I'm not a gambler. I don't do that thing, and I know that, you know, you can have, you know, in-game and live gambling. Can you imagine what the odds were with Gerrit Cole at home, 5-run lead, dealing through four hitless innings, what the odds would be that, you know, for the Dodgers to come back and win that game?
Insane.
And it absolutely insane. And the comedy of errors and the sloppy play in that fifth inning, I've just never seen anything like it in a spot like that, where the game was firmly in control. You know, Aaron Judge drops a fly ball. I mean, a fly ball. You know, you can call it a line drive. It wasn't a line drive. It was a humpback liner, if anything. But he drops one of the most routine plays. You know, your 10U kid is going to make that play. And that happens. The next play, the ground ball, and Volpe makes the right play going to third. Bad throw. Chisholm can't come up with it. And then all of a sudden, Cole goes to work. Punch out in the tough part of that lineup. Okay, he's got a chance now to get out of this. And Mookie Betts hits that dribbler to Rizzo. And if Gerrit Cole does his job and covers first, like you've been taught to do since you were 5 years old, that's it. It's still 5-0 lead. That game is over. And he doesn't cover first. And then you get the base hit by Freeman. It's 5-3, a ball off the wall, misplayed off the wall, tie game. And I think what probably everybody thought, once the Dodgers got back to even, you're like, somehow, some way, they're winning this game. But I just could not believe what I saw. I just couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was telling people, I'm like, you know, in spring training, part of your conditioning, especially the first couple of weeks, is, you know, a group of four or five pitchers, you know, you'll be on a field and you will go through your delivery and there's a ground ball to the right side and you go cover first. Hard hit ball, soft hit ball, doesn't matter. You go cover first. And you do that for 20 minutes. And that's part of your conditioning. But it instinctually teaches you that when you throw a pitch, a ground ball to the right side, you go. And you don't stop until you either A, receive the throw and make the play at first base, or the infielder calls you off, and then you pull up and you let him take it. And Gerrit Cole did neither. He started that way. He was in perfect position to be able to cover the bag and beat Mookie Betts, but he pulls up and points at Rizzo, and Rizzo had yet to field the ball. And, boy, when that happened, that was a huge mistake, obviously, on Gerrit Cole's part. Rizzo did not have time to get to the bag because Betts was busting it up the line and that ball was not hit that hard. So he had no chance to make the play. And then all of a sudden it came absolutely apart after that. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. That was some kind of meltdown. And that's something that those poor players, and maybe not even poor players, those players are going to have to live with for the rest of their career. Maybe you get back there, maybe you don't. But that is something that will haunt them forever, and especially Garrett Cole, you know, who holds himself to a high standard. He is sitting thinking right now, if I cover the bag like I've been taught to do, and it's not even – it's just something that's instinctual. It's not even something that you think about. You react, you go cover the bag until you're called off. If I do that, they win that game. It's still a 5-0 game through five innings, and there's no chance the Dodgers are going to mount something after that, or very little. So that was something like I've never seen. I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't either. That whole inning blew me away. I mean, the other thing that blew me away with the series, have you seen all the stuff that's come out afterwards of how many injuries Freddie Freeman was dealing with? I mean, we're talking cracked ribs, we're talking the ankle. I think he was dealing with some kind of hamstring thing on top of it. Like, he's starting to sound like a hockey player, B.A.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you saw him, you know, in the previous series. You know, thank goodness they, you know, clinched as quickly as they did it. He had a little bit of time to you know, get some sort of rest. But yeah, he had a hard time, you know, a base hit, and he's barely getting to first base because of that ankle. Didn't even know about the ribs, but that's got to be super painful to even just swing the bat. But that was – and what a performance. Not only did he play through all that, but at one point, homering in 6 consecutive World Series games, are you kidding me? And dramatic homers. You know, the granny to walk it off. And then how about the homers in the first inning, you know, the 2-run homers in the first inning to set the tone? I mean, it just an incredible series. The easiest MVP, I think, that's probably been given out, you know, in the World Series in a long time. I mean, he was a man on a mission. What a cool story, and what a great performance.
All right, B.A., I've got a couple questions I want to ask you, because we were talking about, you know, just kind of looking back at the last 2 seasons and all the rule changes that have happened to this game. And because I thought the playoffs were outstanding this year, and I thought they were great. I love the fact that you don't have the phantom runner to start extra innings too. I'd rather see the game played the way it should be played without putting a fantasy runner out on second base to try to speed up things. So before we go back and look at some of the things that they've done, there's a lot of talk right now about making starting pitching go 6 innings or 90 to 100 pitches. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I just don't know how you legislate that. I mean, I know that you just said what you can do, but there's got to be an effectiveness factor. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just say, well, he's got to go 6. Well, what if he's getting hammered in the second or third? You got to be able to get him out of there at 2 1/3 innings and 65 pitches because he's given up 6 runs. You know, you can't be held to those numbers. So I don't even know how you do anything like that.
Because the next thing after that is, well, if you're up by 5 runs after the 7th, it's mercy rule. Right?
Okay, I mean, yes.
Something stupid like that.
Travel ball.
Yes.
Travel ball stuff. This is Major League Baseball. I'm sorry. Major League Baseball. By the way, I don't mind the fantasy runner in the regular season, because the way these bullpens are built now, these games would last forever, and you would tear up your staff for good. I love it in the postseason because it's different.
Right.
But in the regular season, I don't mind that guy being out there because there's instant action. There's something that's going to happen, and it's going to happen relatively quickly. But yeah, to your point, I love the fact that they go back to, you know, the old rules in the regular, you know, in the postseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the playoffs. But in the regular season, I don't mind that guy running out there at all, because if not, you'd be playing 15, 16, 17 innings all the time.
I've gotten used to the zombie runner, but I still don't love it, B.A. It just seems wrong that it's like, all right, let's just put somebody out there for no reason. Let's hurry this thing up. Come on, we got to give the field up so that the next Little League team can take over.
Yeah, right.
That's
I know.
My problem. I get it, and we don't want to blow out these bullpens, and we want these games to end before midnight. Like, I understand it and all those things, but it just feels very like, you know, hang on, the U-12 softball team is coming, and we got to finish this thing.
Yeah, no, I both sides of the argument, I'm fine with. You know, the people that loathe it, I get it. The people that don't mind it or like it, I get that too, because there's instant action. There's just too much of the game has gotten to the 3 outcomes. And there is so much because of the way that they're able to take these pitchers and, you know, put them in a pitch lab, pitch shaping, velocity, all of this stuff. I mean, what was the average this year for Major League Baseball? 240 something, 240 maybe, you know, I mean, so just nothing happens. And with these strong bullpens, and most teams that have been able to put together a pretty sturdy bullpen for the most part, you get to a tie game through nine, and you're going to start going into your high leverage guys. You're going to sit there all night. There will be nothing happen. It'll be three up, three down, two punch outs, and a pop. I mean, nothing will happen.
Throw a double play in there.
Yeah, that too. I mean, listen, but again, I understand people that don't like that because that's not how baseball has played for 150 years. Mm. I get that too. But like I said, I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. It would bother me in the postseason for sure because that's a different animal. But regular season, I'm kind of on the fence. If they go back to the old way, fine. If they keep the ghost runner, I'm not losing sleep.
All right, league average splits this year, BA, 243 batting average, 312 on base, 399 slugging.
Yeah, that's a whole lot of nothing.
That's a lot. I'll give it to you.
For the league average at 243, 312, those guys 20, 25 years ago are probably not even going to be on the team. And if they are, you're going to be a utility player that gets very little playing time. And that's the average of the entire league. That's taking everybody into account. You are a bench player, is what those numbers say.
Mm. Let me go through it. I'm just looking back at the last 2 years, and I don't want to spend a ton of time, but I want your perspective. And, you know, because we've had time to let all this stuff settle in, and I think we forget about it now. It's just become part of the game, and everyone is good with it. So let me go through some of the changes that we've looked through over the last 2 years. Pitch clock, good, bad, indifferent, needs to be tweaked. What do you think?
I think it's awesome.
Okay.
It is absolutely awesome. It puts a pace back into the game, you know, and nobody's really crying about it anymore. As far as the pitchers go, they haven't even used, you know, the time that they've been given. You know, what is it? You know, 18 seconds with nobody on, or 15 and then 18. Yeah, 15 seconds with nobody on, 18 seconds with a runner on base, and they're still on average, you know, delivering that pitch with 7-8 seconds left on the clock. So they're not even using the time that they were given. So that tells me it's not bothering the pitchers one iota. And what it does is it puts action back in the game. It puts a pace back in the game. It moves. A pitch. We've had pitchers here in Tampa that with nobody on base were taking 35 seconds in between pitches. I mean, a pitch and then 35 seconds. Just stare at your watch for a 35-second count before the next pitch comes. I mean, that is just puts you to sleep stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine Rafael Betancourt is probably like pull every hair out of his head at this point, right? I'd hate to watch a game with him right now.
You're right. And all of these guys, listen, there were a lot of big leaguers who took their good old time. And when they put the pitch clock in, they belly ached about it. They didn't like it very much. But guess what? They all were able to make the adjustment and still be effective.
It
moves things along. I absolutely that might be the best thing that they've done. I'll
tell you the other thing is the hitter engagement part of it, like that they've got to be engaged with the pitcher with what is it 8 seconds?
Yeah.
I love that.
Be at the ready. You know, and you get one timeout, and so you've seen how hitters have gotten to be very strategic on how and when they take their timeout because they know they only get one. This can't be the constant call and time. Stepping out again, a lot of nothing happening. You get one, use it wisely.
Bigger bags. Yes, no, don't even notice.
At this point, don't even notice.
I
know that definitely has helped the running game, you know, because with the 15 by 15 bags, what it used to be, now they're 18 by 18. So from home to first, that's 3 inches closer. But when you start looking at from second or first to second and second to third, it's 4.5 inches closer. So that has definitely spiked up the running game as teams get more athletic and realize with the pitcher being limited to the disengagements and the bigger bags, that was going to, you know, that was going to encourage the running game. And that's what we've seen. Again, more action. You know, trying to find teams opportunities to score different ways because you just can't sit back for the most part and slug anymore. The pitching has become very difficult for these hitters for a lot of different reasons. And so you've got to be able to manufacture runs, to find different ways to score. And so that has helped out tremendously. But at this point, you know, I don't notice it. I mean, you know it's there, but it's just become part of the fabric of the game right now.
All right, so two other I want to just get to real quick. The mandatory three batters, like in the playoffs, it felt like – You know, because the Guardians ran into that at one point. You're like, I think they need to take him out. Oh, no, he's got to face two more batters. You know what I like about the mandatory three batters? It makes the managers manage, right?
Ah, thank you. That was just going to say, it puts a huge emphasis on the manager. Do you want to make that move or don't you? I know that you want that pitcher out in the pen on this particular hitter that's coming up. But if it doesn't work out, you're stuck with him for the next two, and they could start pinching. I mean, you have to manage. You have to think about all of the scenarios, not just that one-on-one matchup. And if it doesn't go your way, we go to the next guy. Can't do that.
I so, love it. Yeah, I thought I it made that too. And I think it makes the playoffs even more intense. All right, last one I'm going to ask you about is shift. Defensive
it's
shift.
Fine. No, you know what? It's fine because there used to be, when they first came up with that rule, there was supposed to be a dead area at second base, the point of second base facing center field. It was supposed to be kind of a V of an area that you could not be in. You know, you couldn't be almost directly behind second base. And even Buck Showalter talked about, well, then why don't we chalk that? Why don't we chalk that area? And that's the area that these middle infielders cannot be in. They have not enforced that. You know, when I'm sitting up in my perch, you know, high behind home plate, you're looking at that shortstop when they want to shift against the left-handed hitter. He is almost right behind second base. He's in that area that was supposed to be a dead area. So they're still able to shift. They're just not able to take the second baseman and put him in short right field.
Yeah, it's no longer the extreme.
You have to have your feet on the dirt. So they still have been able to shift and take hits away, especially up the middle. But I love that. I love the fact that you just can't have that second baseman out in shallow right. You know, out in the grass. I love the fact that they at least keep their heels on the dirt.
Too softball-y for me. All right, BA, have a great weekend. I hope you got a lot of candy last night. Take care, my friend.
We didn't even get to Jameis, boys.
I know. We just ran out of time. You want to do another segment with us?
You know what? No. Here's what we'll do. We'll talk about him next week when he lights up the Chargers.
All right, I love it. And I also want to know where the Rays are playing next week. Will you tell me? Are they going to be able to play at home?
Hey, I know as much as you do. I do know this. That right now they're assessing the damage at the Trop. What I didn't realize is that building, all of the electronics in the building are not weatherproof where they are in every outdoor stadium. So, you know, in every outdoor stadium, I'm thinking, well, the Jumbotron in Cleveland is out in the rain and the elements. Yes, but all of the electronics at Tropicana Field, the Jumbotron, everything was built for indoors. It was not built to withstand. So, everything inside was ruined. Everything. Because it wasn't built to withstand water. Here's the other thing that I learned. Because it was a fixed building and a fixed facility, it had zero drainage. So everything that all the rain, everything that came into the Trop after the roof came off, didn't drain.
So it'd be like a basketball arena. Right, if the roof came off a basketball, oh wow! All right, BA,
no drainage. So they're supposed to have that damage assessment done early November. That's when I think that you'll start to figure out, can they fix it? Will they fix it? When will it be done? And what are the plans starting to come into play?
All right, hold these thoughts for next week.
Everything done by Christmas.
All right, BA, we love you. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
You're the man.
See you, boys.
Peace.
See you, brother.
Brian Anderson on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hody 2020 now. Baskin and Phelps. Jeff is off today. Dan Menigan is in today. 216-474-0092. Coming up here in a moment, there was a trade proposal or a thought about a trade proposal for Myles Garrett. We're going to get to that maybe next segment, maybe the end of the segment, because you are probably going to go, what? And then you're going to scratch your head, and then you're going to go, So we're going to bring that up here in a second. I do want to kind of play off of what Brian Anderson was talking about and remind me never to tell him 30 seconds. Because 30 seconds, I got to remember, on Brian Anderson time is like 5.5 minutes.
I got to remember the script.
I love talking to him, though. He's like, I love having him on. He's got such great perspective. And his perspective comes from the same place where all of ours does, too, obviously, because he's a native Clevelander. So I went through some of those rule changes because now's the time, right? World Series is over. We all want to sit here in the beginning and say, oh, I can't believe Major League Baseball changed that rule. They changed that rule. What were they doing? This is my game. And blah, blah, blah. And then, like, 3 weeks into it, we're all like, oh, all right, I get it.
Yeah, a lot of people got real grumpy about it. It just seems normal.
I can't remember the last time somebody said anything to me about the pitch clock. Not once. No one says
pitch clock's awesome.
Oh, Hody did? You want to take credit for yourself? What?
Oh, God.
I can't stand the pitch clock or the runner on second.
And like we said, runner on second during the regular season. And Brian made a good point. He's like, during the regular season, that's fine, but never in the playoffs. So I want to give you the opportunity to talk about some of these rule changes.
Sure. Let's go. Pitch clock is outstanding. I loved it when I saw it in the minors. It's been the same way in the playoffs here. It's even hit the point now where it took me half a second when Luke Weaver threw over for the third time in the World Series. And I was like, wait a minute. Oh, he's got to go. Like, you know, it was one of those in that moment. It finally hit me again that was one of the rules that were there. It's wonderful. These games are moving. They're consistent. I love the pitch clock. I absolutely love it.
I don't even notice the pitch clock except for when it gets to 2-1-0, mm-hmm. and then they're still hanging out on the ball, and then an ump doesn't make the call.
And there's so few pitch vibes. Well, it's kind of depending on, like, if it's a starter on a mound, it kind of feels like the old, I shouldn't even say old. It feels like the play clock in the NFL, where it's like you get 3-2-1
breath.
0. Okay, now it's a delay game.
Yeah, I mean, like, you need the But when you look at the clock, you got to remember there's fractions of a second before you truly hit zero. So that's why sometimes you see the number zero, but it's not really zero.
Sure, or if you're Aaron Rodgers and you get 0.
All right, fair enough. I agree with that. Do you want me to go through them? These are the same way I did with Brian? Because there were a couple things we didn't get to.
But yeah, I love the pitch clock.
So the two things and the one thing I didn't get a chance to ask Brian about was throwing over to first base or disengagement.
Mm-hmm.
I love that rule.
Me too.
I think that rule is a great rule. And again, anything that makes you think about the game a little bit more or put strategy into the game. Let's be honest. You know, when a manager has to make that decision to bring somebody in from the bullpen, knowing they have to face three batters, and the first batter hits a grand slam, and the next guy comes up and hits another home run, you know you want him out of the game. But you're going to have to live with the third batter now, and you're like, is he going to give up three in a row?
Well, and as much as we're all complaining about how starting pitchers aren't the way that they used to, we've also gotten rid of one of the things of baseball that always drove me nuts, which was always like the loogie, you know, the left-handed one-out guy. And so that was the thing that would always drive me nuts, is it's like, okay, so now you're gonna start it with Eric Plunk, and then here comes Paul Aussemacher, and then here comes Jim Poole. And like, you would do this all back and forth like this, and you're like, okay, good. That inning now took an hour because we had to keep switching pitchers back and forth to go with the right-handed, left-handed, and all that stuff. It was like, let's end this. This is ridiculous.
I also think that it makes pitchers like Skubal like that more intriguing to want to watch them, because you know you're like, oh man, that manager's going to leave his starter out for five, maybe six, right, seven innings.
Well, it did it with Cole.
Yeah.
You know, Cole went 112 or something like that for six innings. It was something along those lines. Like, they did it with Yamamoto. Yamamoto tossed his tail off in that game too.
But didn't it make it sweeter when the Guardians came back and beat Skubal?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I look at some of that stuff and I'm like, yeah. And again, these are the intricacies of the game that I think that, you know, when you get into the chess match and the, you know why they won that inning? Because the leadoff hitter fouled off 15 pitches and he really wore down the starting pitcher. And then all of a sudden he had nothing left for the rest of the inning. Like, I love that cat and mouse game. And that's, I think, what makes baseball great. And I think that they've highlighted a lot of the things that made the game great. And they've actually made the manager manage a lot more. You know, you add the DH and you take away some of the managing nuances, but by the same token, when you turn and say, okay, here we go, you got to face three batters, now you put that right back in.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The bigger bases,
yeah.
Love them. Here's the biggest thing that has stood out to me. So in 2019, before the rule changes, there were 2,280 stolen bases. 2024, 3,617 stolen bases. We have gained 1,000 stolen bases in 5 years. Sold. More. Let's go. And it's been ticking up every single year in between there. I think we will see more stolen bases on top of it.
You think they'll make the bases even bigger?
No.
Are they good where
they are? I think they're the right size. I mean, again, we've jumped 1,000 in 5 years since these new rule changes have come in there. Let's go. More stolen bases makes the game more fun.
Someone's going to make the argument to make them bigger, though, don't you think?
Well, I mean, we live in America. Everything needs to be bigger and better.
I'm just waiting for the safety bag at first. It's coming.
I wonder. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's one thing soon.
That's definitely.
But with the bigger bags, it's gotten better. We haven't had as many people stepping on ankles, so that's worth it in itself. The no shift stuff, that's the one that I was 50-50 on. I remain 50-50 on it. Again, 5 years ago, 2019, you had a 252 batting average with a 323 on base and a 435 slug. 2024, 243, 312, 399. Getting rid of the shift does not help batting average. It does not put more balls in play.
There was a Myles Garrett trade scenario. Not saying any of it's reality, but it's worth your listen. It's worth listening to. You're going to hear it when you come back. 216-474-0092, Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. 92. But anyway, your chance to get in on that is coming up at 1 o'clock, so you want to lock in on that. Also, you know Tim May at 1 o'clock, and Quick Predicts coming up at 1:40. Also, what am I looking at? I just want to make sure. So Kevin's speaking today, too, isn't he?
Yes, yeah, we'll have Kevin Stefanski probably between 1:20, 1:30, somewhere in between there. A little bit of news from Browns practice as well. Joel Bitonio, Denzel Ward, David Njoku, all back at practice today.
Oh, that's
today.
Good. That's great news.
So those three back at practice, Joel Bitonio, Denzel Ward, David Njoku. Again, we will have a final injury report. Well, not a final, I should say. That one will come on Sunday.
Sunday morning, yeah.
You can catch it at 92 The Fan, Browns Radio Network as well, where you guys will have it.
First.
You hear that on NCX. Yeah. You can get it. So, Joel Bitonio, Denzel Ward, David Njoku, all back at practice today. Kevin Stefanski will rule out a couple of guys, usually on Friday. So we'll keep an ear out right here.
You think they get mad? Most people know this, but there are a couple of pregame shows going on here, right? So we do the Browns Radio Network one. Jeff and I are in that. That's also on our sister station, 98.5 NCX, too. So
yes.
Like one day I just want to hop in there and go, 98.5 NCX. All right, here's your... Here's your report on what's going on for the game today. I go, here's the injury report on 98.5. It's, I don't know.
Would be pretty good, yeah.
All right.
That could get fun.
Can we get into this? Because I brought this up a couple minutes ago, and I know some folks are probably hanging by a thread to find out. What was the Myles Garrett, like, trade rumor kind of thing? Not trade rumor, just kind of a thought that was out there.
So, get up this morning, had Mike Tenenbaum on, and he was throwing out some trade proposals. And I am here for all hypothetical trade proposals. I enjoy them greatly in all sports. They
I know
forever
people that
make me
absolutely
laugh.
Hate them. People in this business are like, oh, what are you going to do, go out and do trade proposals all day for 4 hours? No, but every once in a while, there's one like this.
I enjoy them greatly. So this is audio courtesy of ESPN. Get up, Mike Tenenbaum. Buckle in, folks.
Come on.
Audio courtesy of ESPN. Myles Garrett for Jahmyr Gibbs, 3 first-round picks. Possibly a second, too. First and foremost, Browns fans, I think we all would take that.
So wait, did he not also throw in the Ambassador Bridge, too?
There's talk of that, the Joe Louis fist.
Oh, man.
This is like when everybody used to build trade proposals for the Cavaliers, and it would all start with our renewable. That's kind of like what I feel like we're doing here. No, there's no way Brad Holmes would do that. That's ridiculous. Like, Myles Garrett is one of the best defensive players in football. He is one of the top three. We could all argue if he's the best, the second, the third, whatever. All we know is we all would want Myles Garrett on our team. But 3 first-round picks? Are you what? He's 29. Really? You're just going to completely, like... Browns fans all over the place were like, Myles, we love you. It's been a hell of a time. You will be a Brown for life. You will never have to buy a meal here. But
wait, you think they'll throw in that new Gordie Howe International Bridge too, the one that's going over? Can we get both those bridges from here to Canada? If they're going to give us this trade?
I mean, you got to have one that takes you north and one that takes you south. So, yeah, you could probably get both.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome?
It'd be cool.
There is no way they're trading 3 first-round picks for Myles Garrett, and you're saying maybe throw in a second?
Oh, that's what Mike Tenenbaum said.
He's saying it's going to happen?
No. This was his trade proposal from a former GM in the league.
He just said this, right, to get stuff stirred on that show?
I am 95% sure that is the case.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I'll be honest with
asinine.
You. Kids, I love Myles Garrett. Love him. Love the fact that he is part of our community. Love the fact that he did his whole Terminator thing here for Halloween. Love the fact that he showed up at the game. They like that. Like, great. But if Detroit, although I don't, those first round picks, are they almost like second round picks if you think about it? Because they're so good. And could they win the Super Bowl if they got Myles Garrett?
I don't know. Ask the Texans.
Okay, fair enough.
Sorry, that was mean. That was mean. I shouldn't have said that.
Wow. That's
that one. That one leaves a mark. Yeah.
You do it, right?
Every Browns fan should be like, yup.
Miles, we love you, man. You can come back anytime you want.
Heck of a run.
We'll buy you a beer. We'll thank you for every moment you ever played here.
You'll eat on us, but take it easy, bud. That's absurd. Three first-round picks for a pass rusher. And not to mention a pretty darn good running back, which I know running backs are, you know, they'll tell you, oh, they're a dime a dozen now, all that kind of stuff. And a second-rounder tossed in as well. Yeah, see ya. Thank you. Appreciate it. We have to. Brad Holmes, you would have to drug test Brad Holmes if he called for that. Who's the GM of the Lions, by the way, for those of you who have a life.
There's no way they would do that. Just no way. No way.
Again, they'd have to be drunk. We would have to drug test Brad Holmes. Like, that's the level that trade is. That's the level of, like, your ownership coming downstairs and being like, are you hanging with Aaron Rodgers and taking the Alaska trips? Or are you in the darkness for a good period of time? Because I'm worried about you. What you just did here is worrisome. Like, look, pass rushers are incredibly important. I'm not trashing the position. It's more like, wow, that's something.
It's not happening.
No way in hell.
It's interesting to hear someone say, and then, because if you play the beginning of that clip again, because if you just listen to the beginning, you're like, is he serious? Here's the clip.
Again, audio courtesy of ESPN. Okay. I love that he's being laughed off the set.
Well, I got hooked there for a second.
My favorite part is him just getting laughed off the set for even suggesting this by everybody else who's there. It was like, are you... Whatever it is you're on, I'll take two, bud.
It's insane.
Content mills, you know?
Fun. I just can't see it happen.
No, it's not going to happen. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
I'm glad we got that out there. Now we all know. Again, the Lions would get Myles Garrett. The Browns would get three first-round picks, Jahmyr Gibbs, and a second-round pick, according to what he was saying. But so you can talk about that with your friends over a beer night.
And Brad Holmes would be drug tested on the spot, and Andrew Berry would be basically walking around going like, just doing the full blown Blazing Saddles. Sheriff Bart getting around, everybody with the guns in front of him walking in, going, "Oh baby, you are so talented, and they are so dumb."
I can't even believe it's a story, to be honest with you. I do want to turn the page because we're going to talk to Tim May here in a second. Your thoughts on Ohio State, Penn State tomorrow?
I think my biggest thing involving this game, one, I hope Drew Aller plays because I want both teams as close to 100%
as possible. So as of 15 minutes ago, On3 reported that Penn State quarterback Drew Aller, pride of Medina, is expected to play Saturday against Ohio State. The junior injured his left leg against Wisconsin last weekend, missing the second half of the win.
Good. I'm glad he's going to be out there. I hope he continues to be out there.
I want to see Drew Aller play.
I want to see Drew Aller play too. The biggest thing with this, and this to me is the most hurtful thing that's come out of it, why in the hell is this game not under the lights at a whiteout in Happy Valley? Like, this game needs to be the 8 o'clock.
Why is it the noon game? We got to ask Tim May why this game ended up at noon tomorrow.
Big noon kickoff hopped in, and there's the new deal. And so, like, I'm a Gus Johnson enjoyer. So, like, that, like, cool. I get Gus. I get Joe Klatt. This will be fun. Like, this is great. But, like, man, this game needs to be at night. Everybody in white going absolutely bonkers. And instead, we kind of get a regular run of the mill noon kickoff.
I think they want Big Noon to be the biggest game of the weekend, right? But I'll be honest with you, as we kind of go through this, the aggravating game is the Peacock game when you're Saturday night. That drives me crazy because you're trying to find it all over the place. But the game on NBC should be the biggest, best game of the week in the Big Ten.
You think that would be your best Big Ten game.
But Saturday primetime, right?
Yeah. But no, Big Noon kickoff overruled them, and it stinks. It stinks. Like, that's one of those where it's like, man, you guys are making enough money. You can't give us this one. You can't give us these kids going nuts all dressed in white at night. Like, that's the way that this should be. It should be a hostile environment. And it's still going to be pretty hostile for Ohio State to go into. And Ohio State favored to win, they should be. They're the more talented team. But, like, at the same point, you're like, man.
All right, well, let's find out. Let's ask Tim May when we come back, because I'm looking forward to this. I mean, Ohio State fans, not happy. They wanted a much bigger win last week. And, oh, no, what happens if they lose this week? And are they going to be out of the playoff? There's a million Buckeye storylines going into this game, and Tim May is going to give us all the answers. Plus, your chance to qualify for that Browns cruise? Woo-hoo, stand by. We'll give you the word. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menning.